sometimes it's hard to feel grateful. I've told you before, you see the picture there. Gail and I were in a play together called Meet Me in St. Louis a few years ago. We lived out in Georgia then. And we both got parts in the chorus when I found out after a couple of weeks of practice that the guy who was playing Grandpa had gotten sick and needed somebody to fill in the part. So they gave me the part of Grandpa kind of at the last minute there. And so I got to sing a little and dance a little, and my stage granddaughter was adorable. And so we really had a good time with that. But after I found out that I was going to be playing the part of Grandpa, I was at our young adult Bible study at our house, and these kids were over, and I was talking with them, and I shared with them that I was going to get to play the part of a 70-year-old grandpa in this play. And one of the guys said, "What are they going to do to make you look younger?" And I told him that was hilarious. I said, "I'll use that in a sermon someday, and you're no longer welcome in my home." I mean, come on. I'm all excited about playing this part, and then he slams me like that. I start to feel old, you know, after a little while. Man, sometimes it's hard to be positive when things aren't working out like you'd hope. Sometimes it's hard to be grateful. Sometimes it's just easier to be frustrated. We've got a day designated next month that we call Thanksgiving. And sometimes I don't feel like giving thanks. And I have to believe that sometimes you feel that way too. How do you react when life gets intense or you feel attacked, or maybe you're just kind of blue, or maybe things are going on that you don't even know what you ought to do? How do you deal with that? I've got several knee-jerk reactions when things are going wrong. Sometimes I withdraw. You know, I get discouraged, or I'm frustrated. So it's just easier to kind of retreat back into a shell, you know, build some walls and just hide from the world. Gail really loves it when I do that. Some of you wives know what I'm talking about. Now, other times, when things feel like they're about to explode, I kind of get explosive. You know, I get tense, and my voice gets louder, and my blood pressure rises, and I grit my teeth, and I clench my fists, and physically everything about me tightens up. And then there are those times when life kind of gets hard, and I just get depressed. I kind of walk around with a cloud over my head and act like nobody likes me, everybody hates me. I think I'll go eat worms. I think that's how the song goes. Now, notice I didn't say that any of those responses are mature or spiritual, or, you know, that I recommend them in any way. It's just that that's what happens sometimes when things aren't going the way that I wish they would. And I got to wonder, how is that for you? How is it when things aren't going like you wish? It's hard to be grateful. Sometimes it's hard to be faithful. What do you do when the calendar says it's time for Thanksgiving, or your mom says go say thank you to your grandma, or the Bible says give thanks to the Lord for he is good, and you say, I don't feel thankful? For the past several weeks, we've been in this series studying through the New Testament book of James. The series is called 24/7. Being a Christian, being a Christ follower, is not about 1 hour on Sunday. It's not 9 to 5 weekdays. It's not once in a while when the mood strikes. The idea is that Christianity is not one compartment of life, but it's a whole spectrum of life. It's all of life. It's 24/7, all in and day out, full-time faith. How are you doing with that? Consistently. You know, James begins chapter 5 of his book talking about things like the upper class and the working class. He talks about farmers and preachers. He talks about those who are faithful, those who are not so faithful. And while he doesn't talk specifically about gratitude in this chapter, he stresses in verse 8, be patient and stand firm. The Lord's coming is near. He says in verse 9, do not grumble. Be patient, stand firm, don't grumble. And all of that kind of ties into a positive outlook. It ties into a grateful spirit. It ties into having that kind of perspective that's God-honoring and doing it 24/7. Now, the New Testament was originally written in Greek. The Greek word for patience can literally mean to take a long time to boil. It's keeping your cool when you feel like blowing your top. The idea of standing firm literally means inward strength. It's to strengthen your heart. It's about what's going on inside of you. There's a confidence and a fortitude that you maintain. See, it's not just about being patient on the outside, the taking the long time to boil part. It's also about what's going on inside, strengthening your heart. The do not grumble part is then what comes out of your mouth when you're in the middle of all this stuff that maybe is challenging. Are you under control or griping and complaining all the time? Now, I think sometimes we think about patience and we start thinking that it's kind of like apathy. It's just like if you can convince yourself not to care, then everything will be fine. Be detached. Just kind of let things go. Stay chill. Don't get all worked up when things go wrong because, you know what, it just doesn't really matter. But I'm not sure that that's what godly patience is all about. Patience is not having an indifferent attitude toward what's going on around you. Godly patience is active waiting. Okay, it's like the old saying that you do your best and you trust God to take care of the rest. It's the resolve to kind of face life with perseverance and to confront challenges with strength and persistence. It's attacking problems with kind of a determined trust in God, all the while acknowledging and waiting for His timetable to unfold. King David said in Psalm 27:14, "Wait for the Lord. Be strong, take heart, and wait for the Lord." And I think he said, "Wait for the Lord," twice in that verse because he knew it was going to be hard. He knew that we weren't going to be very good at it. I've got a bottom line for you this morning, and it's pretty simple. In fact, you might leave going, "I came for that," because maybe it's going to seem too simplistic to you. I'll be honest with you. It's simple to say. It's fairly simple to understand, but it is excruciating sometimes to do. But I think that if we can sort this out, I think it could revolutionize how we face pressures in life. It positions us to be both faithful and grateful day in and day out. So you ready? Here we go. Very simple. Do good and wait on God. There you go. When life gets intense, when disappointments come, when nothing is going your way and it just feels like it's not going to get any better, maybe you're ready to blow your stack or lose your mind. Maybe you just want to escape from everything. Do good and wait on God. Keep doing the things that you're supposed to do. Trust that God's going to work things out for the best in the end. Do good, wait on God. See, here's the deal. We do our part, and God does His part, and we can't do His part, and He won't do our part. So we kind of have this deal with God that we're going to do our best, we're going to do good, but then we're going to wait for Him to show up because it's all according to His will anyway. James begins chapter 5 in his book by kind of ripping on these employers who are taking advantage of their employees. See, James knows that there's a lot of people in this culture at this time who were over everybody else and they were exploiting their workers. Unrealistic demands, unreasonable wages. Listen to the things that James says in these early verses of chapter 5. He says, "You have hoarded wealth in the last days. You've lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You've fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. You've condemned and murdered innocent men who were not even opposing you." And then his bottom line, he kind of wraps it up by saying, "The wages that you failed to pay the workmen who mowed your fields are crying out against you." He says, look, the very money that you should have been paying is an indictment against you. The bosses were exploiting the employees. Back when we did our church plant in South Carolina, I was a lead pastor, but we also had a worship pastor, a youth pastor, and a children's pastor. And one afternoon, Jeremiah, you guys met him a few months ago. He was here and led worship for us. Jeremiah one day glanced at the calendar and he saw that it was National Bosses Day, which seems absolutely ridiculous to me. When I was growing up, it would be Mother's Day and Father's Day. And I would say to my parents, "When's Kids Day?" And what do parents say? "Every day is Kids Day," right? I mean, we've all heard that. Every day is Kids Day. Well, every day is Bosses Day. Come on, let's be honest. The boss is in charge. And so here it's National Bosses Day. I mean, I understand Secretary's Day because here's, or Office Admin Day, whatever you call it now, because these are people who are the backbone of the organization and they get overlooked and you need that kind of stuff. But I mean, come on, every day's Bosses Day. Well, Jeremiah glanced at his calendar. He saw that it was Bosses Day. And so he gave me a hug. And then Kim came out of her office And she had a red ruby about that big that she gave me. It was plastic, but, you know, it's the thought that counts. And Michael had preached for me the week before while I was out of town. He gave me a copy of his sermon. Really, they just lavished me with gifts on Boss's Day. I said, man, just wait till Christmas bonus time. I got 3 bags of M&Ms in my drawer. I cannot wait to give you guys. Look, who needs Boss's Day? The boss is in charge. And James says, yeah, you're in charge, and you're taking advantage of everybody. And he's mad about it. He says, look, you employers, the employees under your care, you're ripping them off. And man, he's ticked. He says severe judgment is coming because of your corruption. And maybe you're kind of thinking, wow, this has nothing to do with me. I'm not a tyrant. I'm not a slave trader. I'm not a slumlord. Well, good for you. But you know what? There's a principle here that I think we can all gain. When you're in charge, when you're the employer, there's a responsibility that you have. Not just to make money, not just to keep the customers happy, but it's also to take care of the people who work under you. That doesn't mean a free ride for them. It doesn't mean that you tolerate incompetence, but you should treat them fairly. You should treat them respectfully. Now, what does this have to do with gratitude? Because sometimes it's hard to be in charge. Sometimes it's stressful. It's a headache. It's hard to be thankful when people are relying on you. That can just be tough. So Gail and I like to watch Masterpiece Theater on Sunday nights sometimes. It's on PBS. There are shows like Downton Abbey and Grantchester. There was one called Mr. Selfridge, Little Women. Now, I like to watch cop shows and hunting shows too, so I'm not a total sissy. Okay, but I do watch these shows. And we were watching a show. It's called Poldark. The last season just started. And it's about a British officer who had been, you know, in the Revolutionary War here in America. And if you don't know much about the Revolutionary War, the British sent over about 1 million soldiers who were well-armed. And we had a bunch of farmers with pitchforks, and we kicked their butts and sent them home. Anyways, that was the Revolutionary War. So here's Ross Poldark, and he comes home from the war. He's back in England, finds out that his fiance thought he was dead and married his cousin. That was bad enough. Now the family business, the copper mine, is failing. Of course, everything's got to be dramatic or there wouldn't be a show. And so all this bad stuff's happening. And all the bad guys, because every show has to have people that you hate. So there's the bad guys who are exploiting all the poor people. And they're taking advantage of everybody. And they're mistreating everybody. And here's Ross, the good guy, who is trying to take care of the people who work for him. And he is sacrificing so they can eat. And he's not living in luxury so that they can survive. And there's something profound about a person in charge who's not taking advantage of being in charge. James says, look, managers, leaders, employers, take care of the people who work under you. And it can be stressful to do that. It just can. Maybe that's you. Maybe it's not you. Maybe you say, this has nothing to do with me. But you know what? If you're a parent, you've got a child who's relying on you in some way or another. You may have family members. You may have neighbors and friends who in some way need you. There are other people that we come into contact with whose lives, I mean, listen, their livelihood is based on our generosity. Servers at restaurants are dependent on your kindness. We need to be gracious. I heard a guy talking one time, a preacher. He said he went to a restaurant. It was one he didn't usually go to. He had never seen the workers in there. He got the worst service from the server there that he's ever gotten in his life. It was ridiculous. So he left her a $50 tip. He said anybody having that bad of a day has got to have something really bad going on in their lives. She chased him down. She tried to give it back to him. She apologized all over herself. And they began a conversation that led to her pouring her heart out to him and them praying together before, you know, that he left. And you say, sometimes the attitude is, you're not getting a dime out of me after service like that. But here's the guy who says, you know what, something's going on here. James says, look, you need to have compassion on people who are relying on your care. For employers especially. Maybe it's stressful knowing that employees' livelihoods are on your shoulders. But in those times when it's hard, when it's challenging, he says, do good and wait on God. Manage your staff with integrity, with consistency, with generosity. Trust that God will help you and he'll reward you. Now, the other side of the coin when it comes to the workplace is the employees. Sometimes you're not very thankful because those in authority over you are being unfair. That's a reality sometimes. There are people who are going to abuse their power because they're in control. There are supervisors who are going to take advantage of you. There are bosses who are going to treat you like slave labor. Some teachers, some coaches, even some law enforcement might be disrespectful. Not the norm, but it can happen. And you know what? People like that can steal your joy and can make it hard to be grateful. There are people who kind of take the pressure cooker of your life and they set it squarely on volcanic eruption. You know what I'm saying? I mean they just set you up for an explosion. At the end of verse 4, James says, look, the cries of the harvesters, these who've been mistreated, have reached the ears of the Almighty. In other words, God feels your pain. But then he says in verse 9, look, don't grumble against each other or you're going to be judged. See, it's tempting when your boss is a jerk or your parents are unreasonable or the policeman won't give you a break or your teacher has it in for you to become belligerent or hateful or disrespectful. But James says, look, be patient. Happens to everybody. I heard somebody describe patience one time as the ability to idle your motor when you feel like stripping your gears. It means you refuse to retaliate, that you don't lower yourself to their level, that you do good and you wait on God. You keep doing your best. You trust that God's going to work things out for the best for you. Ultimately, do good and wait on God. So whether you're the CEO who's in charge or you're an employee at the bottom of the food chain, you can still do good. You can still wait, trusting that God's in control. Gratitude, faithfulness, easier when you've given your best. But then James talks about farmers in this passage. Look at verses 7 and 8. He says, look, be patient until the Lord's coming. See how the farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crop and how patient he is for the autumn and spring rains. You too, be patient and stand firm because the Lord's coming is near. It might be something as routine as the spring and fall rain. It might be something as earth-shattering as the return of Jesus. But some things are outside our sphere of influence, right? And sometimes it's hard to be grateful when circumstances are beyond your control. Wouldn't you agree that when circumstances go from beyond your control to out of control, when pressure really starts to heat up, man, gratitude and faithfulness are the last thing on your mind. Sometimes it's just survival. Sometimes it's, you know, revenge. I've heard people say, and somebody said it to me today, it's a dangerous thing to pray for patience. Because the only way to develop patience is to have somebody try your patience. It's a dangerous thing to ask God for patience because something's going to push our buttons. We've all been there. We've all faced circumstances that are beyond our ability to manage. And the truth is, those of us who struggle with patience are usually the same people who like to be in control. And that means we like things to unfold a certain way. We like to get things done according to our timetable. And anything that gets in the way of our schedule becomes a test of patience. The text right before this text that we're reading today was in chapter 4 that we talked about last Sunday. And there, James said, look, when you make plans, include God in your plans. He says in chapter 4, verse 15, you ought to pray, if it's the Lord's will, this is what we'll do. Because we're inviting God's agenda. And the very next thing he says in verse 17 is, anyone who knows the good he ought to do and doesn't do it sins. So he switches from talking about include God in your planning to talking about doing good and not missing opportunities. And I think he puts all that together because if we ignore the good that we ought to do because we're too busy sticking to our own plans, we're outside the will of God. So listen, if my schedule gets in the way of God's will, there's a problem. When my schedule gets in the way of God's will, there's a problem. I've got to put my schedule aside. And you know what it takes to do that? It takes patience. So here we are back to that again. I'm releasing my agenda to God. And so he uses the example of farmers here in chapter 5. No one who is impatient should ever be a farmer. Farmers work hard. They're constantly busy, sun up to sundown. They recognize that laziness can lead to ruin. But you know what? I've met a lot of farmers. I've never met a farmer who was in a hurry. Can you imagine somebody as high-strung as me riding a tractor down Louisville Road with 50 cars stacked up behind me? I would need counseling. I would need shots. I mean, I could not handle it. These guys do it with heartless indifference. They just ride their tractor 15 miles an hour down the road. I would be a wreck. But they just know you can't hurry this baby along. Come on, you know, you'll get there. And they get there. A farmer knows that all the worrying and impatience in the world does not make the weather change and it does not make the crops grow faster. You got to come to terms with things beyond your control. And we all need to do that. I read a story years ago about a little boy came home from school, first day of school. He was in tears, and his mom knew that he would be in tears because kids can be really cruel. This little boy had a big birthmark on one side of his face. And he was really self-conscious. He was mistreated at school. His mom lifts him up, puts him on her lap, gives him a big hug and says, you know, I love you and all the things moms say. And she said, you know what, son? You can work hard, do your best. You can earn respect. You can love and you can be loved. But there are some things in life you cannot change. And years later, Dr. Charles Eliot, who was then the president of Harvard University, said, the greatest lesson I ever learned was when I was 6 years old and my mom told me there are some things in life you cannot change. And every picture I found of him online was from that side out of respect because the other side of his face is covered with a birthmark. There's some things in life you cannot change. And he's right. And some of us are 50, 60, 70 years old, and we're still refusing to accept that. We need to do good and wait on God. And you know what? James still isn't finished. He references the prophets from the Old Testament in verse 10. He says, look, brothers and sisters, as an example of patience in the face of suffering, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. He says, look, they're an example of patience in the face of suffering. It's hard to be thankful. It's hard to be faithful when you're suffering. Think about the prophets in Israel. These men were called by God. They had this important information they needed to share. They were God's catalyst for change to lead the nation back to the Lord. These were leaders who loved God. They loved their country. And they only wanted what was best for their people. And they were always constantly opposed, repeatedly. Sometimes by their enemies, more often by those they were trying to help. See, life is hard when your intentions are misunderstood. And sometimes that happens. Remember Daniel? Daniel gets thrown into a lion's den. Hosea's wife cheated on him. Jeremiah was put in stocks. He was confined to prison. He was thrown into a pit. Ezekiel had to endure the pain of his wife's untimely death. Elijah had to go into hiding for 3.5 years. In the New Testament, John the Baptist was imprisoned. He was later beheaded. These prophets endured all kinds of persecution and overwhelming emotional trauma, all the while living a godly life, doing exactly what God told them to do. And their ministries were tough. They didn't give up. They didn't curse God. They didn't throw in the towel. They kept doing what they were called to do. You ever had anybody oppose you? Ever had anybody make accusations against you? Ever had your kids think that you're mean or, you know, that you're just bossy all the time? Ever have students and coworkers blame you for their problems? You know, a lot of tension in our lives comes because we're misunderstood or because people think we're being unfair or we're being unjust. In those times, we got to just keep doing good and wait on God. There may be times when you need to clarify your position, you need to explain what you meant in some way. But I have found in my life that if you go through life trying to defend every word that you say and trying to explain everything that you meant and every sideways glance and somebody got their feelings hurt, you can spend all your time defending yourself and you stop getting anything done. Do good, wait on God, keep being faithful, and God's going to sort out the misunderstandings. And then James says, look, if all that's not enough, let's talk about Job in the Old Testament. Look at verse 11 of James 5. As you know, we consider blessed those who persevered. You've heard of Job's perseverance. You've seen what the Lord finally brought about. The Lord is full of compassion and mercy. You know, one of the hardest times to be thankful is when you get crushed by overwhelming loss. That's what happened to Job. Man, he was crushed. I can't think of any other way to say it. He's a righteous man with lots of material wealth, every conceivable blessing, and God allowed Satan to devastate his life to test his faithfulness. In one day, he lost all of his flocks, all of his herds, all of his camels, all of his servants. On the same day, he lost all 10 of his children, come on, all 10 of his children in this tragic storm that destroyed the house where they were living. He lost his health with an affliction of boils that was so horrible, he sat outside the camp in a garbage heap. He was scraping these oozing sores with broken pottery. He's been described as the most unjustly afflicted man in history. Even his wife said, "Why don't you just curse God and die?" But through it all, he maintained his integrity. Now, he wasn't perfect, but he never denied his faith. He never cursed God. He never gave up hope. He was blessed in the end with more flocks and herds and servants and children because he remained faithful. And friends, it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter how faithful you are. At some point, suffering is going to come, and it's going to overwhelm you. And we will never learn patience until people try our patience. And we will never learn to endure until circumstances require endurance. Now, I hope you never have to go through all the things Job went through, but you'll go through some of the things he went through because everybody does. It is the human condition. Think about it. What happens when overwhelming loss crushes you? Maybe it's death, maybe it's divorce. Maybe it's a financial or a business loss. Maybe it's rebellious kids. Maybe you're betrayed by somebody you trusted. What do you do when life falls apart? James suggests here the only reasonable response is to do good and wait on God. He says, look, you might be devastated, crushed. Your life might never be the same. The hope of heaven might be all you've got left. But until then, keep doing good. Keep waiting. There's always something to be grateful for. And then at the end of this text for this morning, he's talked about employers, employees, farmers, prophets, and Job. He throws in verse 12. James just always does this. At the end, he throws in something else that you have to stop and think, why did he say that? Verse 12, above all my brothers, do not swear, not by heaven or earth or by anything else. Let your yes be yes and your no, no, or you'll be condemned. And at first you look at that and think, well, why did he throw that in? He's talking about being patient, not being overwhelmed by circumstances. All of a sudden, he says, don't swear. Now, some of us swear using bad words maybe when we're stressed. And he's not talking about using swear words. He's talking about swearing an oath. He's talking about making rash promises or trying to manipulate people or manipulate God by making false promises. When life gets intense, it's easy to say things you don't mean. It's easy to bargain with God to try to get your way. We're tempted to swear some kind of an oath to relieve the pressure. But James says that's not the answer. The answer is to do good and wait on God. You just keep telling the truth. You just keep being a person of integrity. You just keep being faithful. Remember that God's in control. And maybe you're out here thinking, you know, Mark, this just goes against my nature to be patient. I mean, I am by nature an impatient person. I get that. Believe me, I get that. But James makes it clear that patience is a mark of integrity and a mark of self-control. And those are two things that are a part of what it means to be a follower of Jesus. So we need to strive to learn patience, to do good, to wait on God. I have often said, maybe you've heard me say, that besides the Bible, the one book that has probably had more of an influence on my life than any other book is the book, The Hiding Place by Corrie Ten Boom. I read it the first time when I was in middle school. I've read it several times since. Corrie Ten Boom lived with her family in Holland in the years leading up to World War II. The Ten Booms were Christians, but when the Nazis took over Holland, they began hiding Jews in their home. They built a secret room, a hiding place to hide Jews. And Corrie and her family ultimately were betrayed by neighbors. They wound up in a concentration camp. Her elderly father died within days of getting there. Her sister Betsy lived for a few years. Corrie lived on to be released and to tell her story all over the world. And I'm telling you, the faith that they demonstrated and the, the influence they display and the miracles that God performed in their lives. It's just an amazing story. I highly recommend the book. But I got to be honest with you, it's humbling too, because, man, I am such a whiner, and their lives were so hard. It's hard for me to get my arms around it. Corrie Ten Boom is one of my heroes. But she constantly reveals in the book that it was her sister Betsy who was really the strong one. When the sisters were moved from the horror of this concentration camp in Holland, they were taken deep into Germany to Ravensbrück, which was really more of an extermination camp than anything else. Life just got more and more unbelievable. It's hard to comprehend how human beings can treat other people the way they were treated. Miraculously, they were able to smuggle part of a Bible into camp with them. Corrie said that she and Betsy were put into a barracks that was just crammed full of women. The building was supposed to hold 400. There were 1,400 women housed there. There were these wooden platforms that had straw on them where they were supposed to sleep. They were designed, each platform, for four women. They had nine women in there to live. When they first got to the barracks, the straw was just rancid on their bed. And they got into the bed, and it was covered with fleas. The fleas started biting them immediately. And Corrie just kind of wailed, "How can we live in such a place?" And Betsy said, "Corrie, God told us this morning how to do it." And she opened the little bit of Bible they had to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. And she read, "Encourage the timid, help the weak, be patient with everyone, always be kind to each other, be joyful always, pray continually, give thanks in all circumstances." She said, "There it is, Corrie. God says give thanks in all circumstances. That's the answer. We have to give thanks for everything about this barracks right now." And Corrie just stared at her. She said, "Such as?" And Betsy began to list blessings. "We're here together. We could have been separated. We have a Bible. They could have confiscated it. Because it's so crowded, think of all the women who can hear the gospel, people that we can lead to Christ." And then Betsy said, "Let's thank God for the fleas." And Corrie said, "No way. Absolutely no way can we be thankful for these fleas." And Betsy said, "God didn't say give thanks in some circumstances. He didn't say give thanks in good circumstances. He said give thanks in all circumstances." So they thanked God for the fleas. And Corrie said, "No way." As the weeks passed, what began as a few people became dozens. Then hundreds of ladies would gather around for prayer and for Bible reading and for worship in this barracks. Everywhere else in the camp, prisoners were closely guarded. They were forbidden from doing anything to find hope or joy. But the guards never came into this dormitory. They were almost left without supervision at all. And they were able to worship and celebrate Christ in that awful place. And they couldn't understand it. And one night, Corrie said she drug herself to the barracks through the snow. And she ran into Betsy, who had a twinkle in her eye and a mischievous smile on her face. And she said, "You're looking extraordinarily proud of yourself tonight." And Betsy said, "I found out today why we have so much freedom here. I found out today why nobody comes in here to stop us from what we're doing. The guards don't come in because of the fleas." And so they had to thank God for fleas again. And I think I get so emotional when I think about that story because I think of all the things I complain about. And I think about all the things that I act like are such a big deal. Do good, wait on God, and give thanks in all circumstances. You're going to make it through this. Let's pray. Well, God, sometimes life is hard. Sometimes, truthfully, it's not that hard, and we still act like it is. Sometimes we complain about the littlest things. Sometimes we act entitled as if we deserve an easy life. And sometimes I know that I can just really gripe when things don't go my way. And so you've come along today, and you've reminded us through the words of James that we just need to keep trusting, keep doing what's right, keep being thankful. We need to maintain our integrity. And so, God, I pray today, I pray that we would be the kind of men and women who would honor you in all things, that we would live lives that bring you glory, and that we would get over our pettiness and that we would find joy. That's our prayer in Jesus' name. Amen.